The Nonprofits is made possible by volunteers and the generous support of listeners like you. If the promotion of positive atheist culture and separation of church and state are values you hold, please consider contributing by becoming an ACA member or visiting our product page at evolvefish.com under the Partner tab. Thank you. The Nonprofits. I'm Dennis Lube, along with Russell Glasser and Jeff D., and we're coming to you live from the Free Thought Library on the banks of the River Styx on the 5th of April, 2017. This show is sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization that promotes positive atheism and the separation of church and state. If any of you, or the vast crowds waiting for Charon, want to learn more about the ACA, you can call their voicemail at 512-220-6561 or visit their website at www.atheist-community.org. Luckily, the ferry offers free Wi-Fi. The Nonprofits broadcast live every first and third Wednesday of each month from 7:30 to 9 Central Time. While you're waiting for the ferry, you can even join the chat room by following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com. If you want to see what Sisyphus is up to, we also have a Facebook page at www.facebook.com/the-non-profits. So stand patiently, listening, hollow-eyed and moribund, and have your coins ready.
They'll want to click the Sisyphus button, the Sisyphus cam, yes. If they want to
see how far he's gotten it up that mountain.
Yeah. How's everybody doing?
Just well, fine.
Yeah, it's good to be. Let's see. These
3 week breaks. Oh yeah, for you it's been since like
forever.
Yeah,
it's been 5 weeks.
Damn, ooh. Dude.
And even a 3 week break is like, wow. We still do the show.
I know.
Yeah.
Last time I was on, the Earth wasn't ruled by sentient apes.
Yeah.
So. Uh-huh.
I was halfway writing my intro last week on Wednesday when I realized, wait, no.
Oop.
Yeah. I don't know. To be honest, sometimes it's a relief when I think there's a show and there's not.
Uh-huh.
I love all you listeners. Sometimes I'd just like an evening to relax.
We also love our free time.
Yes.
Yeah. Well.
But that's what we sacrifice for you.
Right. That's why we're here. Hi, that's everybody.
Right. So I hope you all feel good and guilty.
No, they're not forcing us, Russell.
No. But they are obligated to love us.
Yes.
I'm gonna just leap in and begin the episode with a piece of listener mail.
You're a brave man.
Following up.
All right.
We got a few little follow-ups from last episode. Amanda was sitting in for Russell. One of the things we talked about was trolls. A listener wrote in said maybe troll is just the wrong word and doesn't really get at what is problematic about people like that idiot Milo. And I went back and forth. Joshua writes, regarding the term troll, the original term is not derived from the mythical beast, but rather the fishing technique, to fish by trailing a baited line along behind a boat. A forum troll or internet troll is a person who uses a baited topic not to target a specific person, but rather to target anyone who is willing to rise to the bait.
Right.
The troll may or may not care about the issue that is relevant. What matters is that they are using that particular topic to try to get a rise from anyone and generate drama. And this, see, this is the whole core of the discussion is, you know, is that really what's going on with professional muckrakers? Somebody wrote in and suggested provocateurs, mm-hmm. which I just think sounds way too fancy.
Yes,
I don't want to use a nice sounding term. Troll has the right sort of negative ring to it, but the thing is, it does. It's not about whether they care. And the original letter was right. about, you know, hey, there's people out there who it appears really do care and are really actively working toward getting people fired up for negative causes and. She had a point, but then the other somebody else wrote in to point out that the meaning of the term has kind of been lost, and, right. and now it's being used a lot of different ways. It's become much more just generically negative, and not really about a specific kind of thing. And so, what are you going to do? I mean, maybe the language catch up at some point.
We could use another fishing term, chum, and we'd call them chums, but that would send mixed messages. So.
I'd rather call them chumps.
Yes.
Well, I mean, there are two things going on here. One is I didn't get to participate in this subject last week, I'm trying very hard to avoid just triggering the whole discussion again, because I would probably have things to say.
Warning. I don't think we're going to have the whole discussion again. It seems... Yeah. To me, she had a point, but what are you going to do?
Yeah.
I mean, we are not in control of the language.
I
think what we can, the best thing we can
usage.
Do is raise awareness that there is a question there of what folks like Milo are really up to.
That's
worth discussion, and maybe out of that we'll get different language, or maybe everybody's usage of the word troll will swing over and be about assholes like him.
Yeah, I don't necessarily hold with the sometimes popular idea that if somebody is being provocative and harmful, that you should just ignore them and starve them for attention, because that doesn't always work.
Right.
I mean, especially in the age of the internet, like one person amplifying something. I mean, a YouTube video of some teenage kid doing a silly dance does not get 20 million views or whatever due to one person talking about, oh, they've got 19,999,000 views now. I mean, there's an extent to which talking about something amplifies it, but
right.
there's also an extent where when it's out in the culture, the contribution you can make by talking about it at all is very small, and so it's at least good to balance out.
We've entered into this time when attention itself mm-hmm. is a money-making proposition.
It is the currency, yeah.
And sometimes an election-winning currency.
If shutting up about a thing fails to inform people of what's dangerous and bad about it that they might otherwise not notice on their own, but informing people of that helps generate attention. So it's a very difficult
right.
problem.
Right. I mean, consider the fact that we're all kind of active atheists and have been doing that for years.
Yeah.
And, you know, arguably you could say that
is there
by
still
talking
religion?
About religion. Yeah.
Or have we killed it?
Darn it.
There still is some.
Okay. Yeah. Arguably you could say we are helping raise the profile of religion. But I mean, the profile of religion is pretty goddamn high. And so talking negatively about a thing.
Right. It's not
also matters.
Yes, because it's with everybody involved in every conversation practically, right?
Yeah.
It is not going – maybe that's the thing is there's an expectation that, oh, well, you make your case and if you are in the right, then obviously everybody will get that and boom, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have an audience the size of the planet. for what you have to say.
Yeah.
And so the best you can hope for is to slowly, like that Sisyphus guy pushing.
Yeah.
Is he the guy that pushes the rock up?
Yes,
the,
yes, he's the
keeps
one.
Rolling back down and he keeps pushing it up again.
You know, we slowly, ponderously veer public opinion, hopefully, mm-hmm. in a good direction. It does not happen overnight.
Yeah.
So, getting back to what I was saying before, right. I am on the side of go ahead and talk about things that you think are being popular and need to have a spotlight shown on them.
Right.
But a lot of people, well, this is a problem in haven't noticed it so much in our fan group on Facebook, but in the other show's fan group on Facebook, they're constantly swatting people down who are coming in there posting memes that are, you know, here's some religious group saying, you know, believe in Jesus or else you're stupid, you know, that kind of stuff. And then without commentary, just dropping it there like a big fat turd.
Right, right.
Don't do that, because that is
not
commenting on it when you pass it on. That is just giving them attention.
Yeah, those Facebook groups have thousands of people in them, and some of those people are there to genuinely say, oh, look, a big atheist audience, I'll preach to them and win some souls for Christ. And if you're a stranger through the board and you just post this link without comment, there's no way to tell whether your intent is to, you know, here, atheists, swat this down, or whether you're just one of those dickwads.
Can't tell whether you're evangelizing or mocking.
I'm sure atheists who pass that stuff on are thinking, oh, well, you know, this is something my fellow atheists need to see, either to inform them of its existence or because, you know, they'll have fun
attacking it.
But
right.
But no. It's just speaking personally, I do not need to see that unless you accompany it with some kind of commentary. Tell me what's supposed to be funny about it, or tell me what's wrong with it.
Simply drawing attention to a thing is not enough to make a positive contribution to a dialogue.
No.
Like, okay, so on the internet, there are a billion things I have at the internet at my fingertips to entertain myself at any given moment. And I am much more drawn to people who give insightful, useful analysis of a thing than people who just say, here's a thing.
Right. Blah. And if all you've got, I mean, if you can't put it into words, what's bugging you about this thing, right? Just, you're under no obligation to pass it on at all. It's all right if you don't. You know why?
Is it okay to post it and ask what's wrong with this?
I think that is probably enough, right? Like, something bugs me about this. I can't quite put my finger on it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
fine. Yeah. Then
More than that, though.
There is a reason for having it there.
More than that, though, like, we get email. It hardly drives this show.
Yeah.
And
I'm reading one.
The other show, we get a lot of emails also. And sometimes the kinds of emails that we all get are things like, hey, here's an article I read, link.
Right.
I don't know what to say about it. Can you? Which is always strikes me as a little bit rude on the face of it, because it's, I'm not going to say anything about this, but I'm going to dump this 10-page article or this 30-minute video.
Let you deal with it.
We can do our own research.
Right.
Right.
So,
as can all the other people who might actually have something to say about that thing, right? You do not have to pass it on your own. And if you do, you pass it on and have nothing to say about it, then all you're doing is you're giving the people that made the thing you don't like attention.
Right. And in that case, that is worse than saying nothing at all. And what I sometimes like to say to people who try to dump 30-minute YouTube videos or something is like, I say something like, have you watched it? And can you sum up the specific thing that you found difficult about it? Because don't be lazy. You should spend enough time working it out. Like, maybe it's so bad that you'll find out when you watch the whole thing, it's not a problem. Or maybe you can distill the whole problem into a couple of sentences, which is way more likely to get a response to someone you're trying to get to do the analysis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But on this word troll.
Yeah.
Words evolve.
Sure.
And I think very few people are still thinking of phishing when they talk about internet right. trolls. Like the word has created its own cultural context, just like the fact that the word meme now often means a funny picture with a funny bit of text on it and doesn't capture the nuance that Richard Dawkins put into it when describing the word. But you have to be aware of the cultural context and think about whether you're saying a thing that can be understood.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't see a problem with applying the common word troll to somebody who harasses people to get attention, which is what that Milo guy is.
Yeah. Okay. What about news? Is there news?
What about
anything
news?
Happening in the world?
No, nothing's happening in the
having
world.
Having to do with religion or atheism.
There are no events.
A thing did happen in the world. Well, a study was done.
Is it still happening or did it stop happening?
This is an ongoing thing contributed with hashtag nonprofits news by Twitter regular listener Cootie59 who says, let's see. So this study, there is a study, research reveals students in more religious countries perform worse in science and mathematics.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
When I see a headline like that, I immediately go, it's feeding my pre-existing bias. I don't trust it.
I agree. And so, I have not read through this whole study, but I am preparing to take it with a grain of salt.
All right.
What does that mean, take it with a grain of salt? You ever put one grain of salt in something? Does that pretty much make no difference whatsoever?
Pretty much.
Okay, go ahead.
My father used to refer to complete nonsense by saying, I'm taking that with a pound of salt.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Well, that's more of a thing.
That would be inedible.
Hmm. The research published today in the academic journal Intelligence reveals that more religious countries had lower educational performance in science and mathematics. The research led by Giesbert Stout, professor of psychology in the School of Social Sciences at Leeds Beckett, alongside David Geary, is relevant for the government's announcement in the budget that it will be investing through. Okay, this is the UK talking themselves up about how well they did, I think. Right. But let's see. Analysis of the data sets allows conclusions to be drawn about international levels of religiosity, schooling, and educational performances, and levels of human development measured in regard to health, education, and income. Levels of religiosity were determined using representative questionnaires carried out around the world in the World Values Survey and the European Social Survey among the adult population. Levels of school performance in math and science were based on scores from children aged between 14 and 15 years old. So what I'm getting from this is they did a survey of how many people said they were religious in the different countries, and separately, they looked at average test scores in the same country and concluded some stuff.
they concluded, in fact, the title of the article.
Yes.
Okay.
Describing the implications of the finding, Professor Stout said...
Stout.
It's S-T-O-E-T.
Professor Stout, is he all by himself or is he a Stout?
Oh man.
Sorry.
Okay.
That was a really
pray continue.
Bad setup.
He said, whilst
whole
it
family
is
family of Stouts.
It is already known that faith schooling leads to segregation of communities. It is now clear that religiosity is actually directly associated with lower performance, even though,
well,
yeah.
Can they conclude that it's direct? I mean, surely there are other characteristics.
Other factors. Right.
That those yeah. nations might have in common. I mean, we are not the guys who are looking for excuses.
right.
No. We're prepared to believe this, but I would want to hear that they had weeded out other explanations.
When I am being skeptical of something I want to believe, the number one thing I keep in mind is correlation does not equal causation. And I would like to know what additional steps these people took to establish some kind of causal link.
Have they established a causal link? Are they establishing a causal link?
Well, we don't know.
It just says
what we've
it seems,
quote
it seems
from the guy who conducted the study
is that
saying
they've done a correlation.
Right.
They've shown a correlation.
Read the direct quote again.
Direct quote says, "It is now clear that religiosity is actually directly associated with lower performance."
Right.
All right. Well, we're not reading the actual study anyway. Yeah. We're reading an article about the study. Yeah. Is there a link to the actual
There paper? Often is not, because like they wind up being hidden behind a paywall.
Right.
I am not seeing one.
Yeah. I'm thinking he's just pointing out a correlation. That's it.
See,
he's
but
not
I'm
saying
not
it causes it.
I'm not gonna assume that because I don't know other things about the study. I
right,
only know
right.
what this article
says.
Saw fit
right.
to highlight.
If all he did was find a correlation, uh-huh. then he said it's clear now that it's caused by whatever it was he said.
Yeah,
that would not be very astute.
Yeah, but he's not saying caused by; he's saying associated with, and that suggests a correlation. Oh,
right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay. But
the
thing
is, you know, correlation.
The title of the article.
You know, correlation does not equal causation, but correlation does equal correlation. You know,
sure.
It's like
Yeah. Grounds
yeah.
to look
These two
further.
Things
I'm
go
gonna,
together, apparently.
I'm going to leverage some of my background in the math and computer science areas uh-huh. and say that one thing that you want to be especially careful of is how many different factors did they compare to each other in
Good
this
point.
Study? Because what you can do oftentimes, let's say that you are an unscrupulous person who sets out with a study to say, I want to find out that religion is bad somehow.
Right, right.
Now, you compare religion to a whole bunch of statistics about the country. You consider their test scores. You consider their wealth. You consider various things. And you run these numerical analyses and graph the relation between religion and each one of these things. And then you find across the board, hypothetically, let's say, religion is good for income. Religion is good for education. Oh, religious people have slightly higher suicide rates. Publish. And then you've proven your case by cherry picking one statistic out of many.
Right.
So
right.
that's another thing to be cautious about.
And of course, you know, with statistics like that, you can also, you know, show a correlation between two completely different things, like,
mm-hmm.
well, the rise in religiosity and the number of films David Duchovny has starred in, you know, something really insanely stupid.
Yes, the number of pirates in the world and
right.
global warming.
And global warming,
I think, exactly. is it. And you know the one about ice cream and shark attacks, right?
No.
So ice cream sales historically correlate to the number of shark attacks.
Okay.
Of course, the reason is that shark attacks occur the most when a lot of people are swimming, which is usually in the summer.
Right, so, right.
But that's a cute little fact that you'll
awesome.
Get from a data analysis
awesome.
Class. Anyway, more mail?
Yeah. Okay. Let's get the follow-ups to the previous, to last
proceed
things out of the way first. La- last episode, Dennis had a question. And it was about
right.
What was the question again?
Why do Christians love Jesus?
Why do Christians love Jesus? And Doug writes, you're pondering on the nature of the love Christians have for Jesus, because we went there, right? What does that even mean?
Right.
That they love Jesus, and what are they talking about? Your pondering on the nature of the love Christians have for Jesus gave me flashbacks to when I was dragged to church every other week by my dad. Thanks, Dennis.
Trigger warning.
The topic of what kind of love you should have for God was addressed fairly frequently. They compared it to various other kinds of love. Philia, right. Brotherly love, love for one's fellow human beings, friendship. Storge. I'd never heard this one. S-T-O-R-G-E. I never heard this before. Not usually mentioned by name,
no.
But refers to familial love, such as what a parent feels for their children.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
You'd think this was the one, wouldn't you?
You would think. That's what Jesus feels towards his followers.
And the followers could feel toward him like he's a father figure.
Oh, like he's a father figure.
Yeah. Eros, passionate love, romantic sexual love, and agape, the love of God for man and of man for God.
Okay.
Why this needs to be in a separate category when I would have thought the familial kind of love would cover it, because that's like, and generally, when I'm thinking about religion, it's like, this is why we had kings and emperors and stuff, right? It's all human beings. I mean, we used to be tribes of hominids with the big tough ape that was the leader, and everybody would fall in line behind the big tough leader, right? I would think that would be more like familial love, but they have this other special thing, agape. Doug goes on, they've got a special word for it, and in a historical context, it's ill-defined. A quick look at the Wikipedia article on the subject shows that various authors in antiquity used it to mean different things.
A religious term that's ill-defined?
Yeah, I
I've never heard of such a thing.
Even modern-day Christians sometimes use it to mean charity in some situations, and that's how it's usually translated in Christian scripture. But what does charity have to do? How does that work? I could get that, okay, there's a cosmic entity, and it feels a sense of charity toward us meaningless little physical nothings.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But agape is supposed to be the love of God for man and the love of man for God.
Right.
So what is this saying?
What is the relationship between those two criteria?
Is man being charitable toward God? Actually, if you look at the kind of crap that God is credited with and the way that Christians are constantly spinning to say that that's okay, it kind of is. Humans being fucking charitable toward the cosmic entity that goes around, like, you know, when not directly personally murdering people, sitting back with his, you know, with his thumbs and his belt loops,
the love that one has for a race of intelligent ants they've created?
Charity, apparently. Well, he says that it's used to mean different things. I did not look up the Wikipedia article. So this is only one, but I just think this one that he cites, that's the more modern one, is fascinating.
Yeah. It's interesting. I've never researched the word, but whenever I've encountered it, it read as agape to me. And I just read it as, this slack-jawed, cow-eyed adoration, you know?
Yeah. I don't know what the connection is between those words. Maybe our listener will straighten us out. So there you go.
Weird.
It's a special kind of love that means. It's very apparently special means, love. Means whatever the religious leader needs to motivate his followers to feel at any given time.
Yeah.
Probably.
God loves you, but he'll take that love away if you don't do what I say.
And, excuse me, thank you, Doug, for that feedback.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got something political and close to home.
What you got?
There is a submitted by Peter Bulwark on our Facebook discussion group. A Texas bill would allow clerks to refuse to issue same-sex marriage licenses.
Well, again.
So, yeah. The usual shenanigans.
Of course.
Hasn't this been tried already in other states?
It has. This June will mark 2 years since the U.S. Supreme Court ruled to legalize gay marriage in Obergefell versus Hodges. That's worth noting. But even now, Texas lawmakers are still trying to chip away the rights brought to same-sex couples by that landmark decision.
Have you noticed that, like, the complaints that before gay marriage, it was all, you know, that's an attack on my marriage, on my straight marriage.
Yeah.
No, have you heard anybody still making that claim after 2 years of everybody's straight marriage still being just the same way it was?
I mean, I'm sure they are somewhere.
I bet they are.
It's not, it's not like the constant drumbeat like it used to be.
No, you're right. I mean, what I haven't heard in particular is people saying, my marriage was ruined by gay marriage.
Yeah.
Right.
Because, of course, it wasn't.
Right. That was never a thing.
Yeah. So, that's a good observation. When the 85th biennial Texas legislative session opened in January, a pair of Republican state senators, Charles Perry of Lubbock and Brian Birdwell.
I'm sorry, it was
Granbury,
what annual?
The biennial.
Okay.
Is this the bi community going after the gay community? By any chance?
Biennial Texas legislative session. They meet twice a year. That's what it is. Or is that once every 2 years?
I can never remember those terms. Is it flammable or inflammable? I don't know.
Bicentennial was the 200 year anniversary of the country. So, Kit?
Huh?
And, I don't know.
And I don't understand biennial because if it's bi, then it doesn't always have to be annual.
Oh, God.
Oh.
Wow.
I mean, it could be. Not that there's anything wrong
You're
with
not
that.
Reaching at all.
So they filed a thing which would allow county clerks to opt out of signing marriage license for gay couples.
This
right?
Oh my gosh! So
I don't want my name on it.
Oh God. What on earth are they doing? This has been. I thought this was resolved.
This is a pretty weak ass response to the gay marriage issue because, like, rather it seems like they must have given up on making any sweeping changes, and they're like, "Well, you don't have to sign a thing personally." It reminds me of the sort of overall fate of creationism over time, where it used to be like. You know, let's stop anybody from talking about evolution ever. And then 20 years later, it was like, well, let's make sure that creationism is taught on equal footing.
Yeah.
And then it was, let's make sure you're allowed to mention creationism. And,
right.
And it's like, let's make sure you're allowed to mention not creationism, but the vague idea that maybe something that wasn't evolution is going on.
Right.
So we are witnessing that happening to gay marriage in real time, maybe.
Yeah. Two steps forward, one step back.
Right, and it's all about – they're just madly scrabbling for a toehold.
Yeah.
So they dig their – clawed toes in and then start working toward getting back all the other stuff.
Yeah. Nail some religious pythons in the culture.
The YouTube chat, which, by the way, is a thing now. We've started that up. There's a live chat during the show, which is actually quite a bit more hopping at the moment than I've seen the Ustream chat in a long time.
Is that the chat I keep referring to at the...
No, we had like mostly directed people toward Ustream, but now there's a YouTube chat and it's moderated and it's non-persistent. Well,
I should probably be giving that URL then, darn it.
Yeah, you should. give the URL for the nonprofit's YouTube channel. We do not, I want to make clear, broadcast live video, but we do broadcast live audio and then an attractive array of images related to the nonprofits, which you, Dennis, can see on the screen behind you right now.
Well, for certain values of attractive.
Now we're all staring at ourselves.
Yes. Damn, I'm gorgeous.
We look off into the sunset.
Yes. In that picture, I'm looking completely different direction from all the rest of you.
Right. Everybody is looking at the chat room at the moment, so say hello.
We're all looking at different angles.
Hello, chat room.
But who said this? Jennifer Stocking says that biannual is twice a year. Oh, except the word was biennial, so I don't know the difference. Biennial. Anyway, where were we?
All right.
Well, a centennial is the 100-year anniversary, so biennial, maybe that is a 2-year anniversary? Would that even make any sense?
I have this machine in front of me that can search for anything, and somehow I haven't just typed it in.
Every
2 years.
More stupid pro-religion politics here in Texas.
Yeah.
Do we have anything more?
We've got a poll quote. Oh, this is from Justice Anthony Kennedy in Obergefell, so it's a not stupid quote. Marriage is sacred to those who live by their religions and offers unique fulfillment to those. Okay, it's kind of stupid. To those who find meaning in the secular realm, its dynamic allows two people to find a life that could not be found alone. For a marriage becomes greater than just the two persons. Rising from the most basic human needs, marriage is essential to our most profound hopes and aspirations, Justice Anthony Kennedy wrote in the majority opinion he penned in Obergefell. I don't know. It's a little overly flowery, but I guess
Star Wars does the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm a fan. Marriage is working out fine for me.
Me too.
All right. Good grief. All right. Yeah. So
everyone should be free to peacefully live and work according to their convictions without fear of being punished by the government, said Jonathan Sands.
Who's punishing any?
President of Texas Values.
Yeah. And how the hell can you say those words and be completely oblivious to the punishment you are planning to impose to allow clerks to impose on people whose their desires are not what that clerk wants. It's none of his damn business. Grrr.
Yeah.
All right. So
evil.
And also, he's talking about government employees here specifically.
Right.
Can you fire somebody for not doing their job?
And this has been done. I thought it was over with what's her name. That was all over the news. You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That lady, the religious lady that did this thing in a different state.
Right.
I don't have any of my facts in front of me, so I sound like a complete idiot. let's move on.
What the hell was her name?
Let's move on. We have one more response to a previous thing that we can go into new business. Mike from Vancouver Island, Canada writes, I just listened to your latest episode, and I want to point out something concerning Amanda's contention that the mental health community has reached a consensus on Trump. There was a discussion, about whether our current president is nuts. Not really a religious issue, but it came up, right? We had a difference of opinion as to whether that had or could be concluded. Mike says, not that I want to or am defending Trump, but as far as we know, not a single professional who has made a diagnosis on Trump has actually seen him in a clinical setting with patient-doctor privilege. The American psychiatrist professional body says it's unethical to make a diagnosis without talking to or examining the person being diagnosed. This is called the Goldwater Rule, created when Barry Goldwater ran for president and his opposition sent a questionnaire to psychologists around the country to try to get them to declare him crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a bad idea to be asking people in a profession that is saying such fundamentally important, serious things about people, to ask them to do that flippantly or to encourage them to do that flippantly. Mm-hmm. As far as I'm concerned, he might well be out of his gourd. But I'm not a professional, and that my saying that does not constitute a diagnosis. And watching him on TV and drawing a conclusion is not how it works.
Right.
Right. And, I mean, like you were saying before, it doesn't matter. Or am I just repeating what you were saying last time?
I was bringing you up to speed about last episode. And that was kind of my position is, we had the same mystery before us on a previous Republican president when nobody could decide. Yeah. Nobody could prove one way or another whether he was out of his mind or just wildly incompetent or, you know, evil in a very sharp way,
right?
Where it just looked like craziness. But the thing is, it doesn't matter. What matters is what is that individual in power doing?
Yeah, and the events that take place.
Are you in favor of that or not? And if you're not, well, we have procedures for affecting the course of government.
And I would also point out,
and those procedures do not include everybody leap into conclusions about that politician's sanity.
Mm-hmm. I want to point out that, I certainly agree that Trump is extremely incompetent when it comes to getting good results for the things that he runs or accomplishing positive things for anybody. But, looked at in a certain light, he's extremely effective at a variety of things. I mean, he has continued to be disgustingly rich. Granted, he was born rich, and
it is not impossible to see what could motivate some people to being impressed by him.
He is,
that's the thing,
now the most, like, among the most powerful people in the world, and whatever you may feel about his motivations, things have worked out very well for him. And I wouldn't say that, from a pure self-interest point of view, I can't say that the things he's done to get there were completely irrational, looked at in that way.
If the ends justify the means.
Right.
Yeah.
Is he dangerous and harmful? Absolutely.
I wonder if
let's not spend much more time. Dennis should have his say.
This
is not a political show.
I wonder if we have enough checks and balances that the country could be run by a deck of, Cards Against Humanity. And, things the cards say, oh, yeah, we can do that. And other things the courts go, no.
How are the deck of cards going to sign legislation? Or, walk out of the room in a huff when they're supposed to be signing the legislation
and they get questioned in a way.
All right. Anyway, so there we go. We are all up to speed on feedback from last episode. Russell?
Wow, we got wacky people in positions of power just left and right today. Roy Moore's wife said a thing.
Oh, boy.
Really? He has a wife? And she's allowed to speak in public?
Yeah, you gotta wonder.
Not all of them allow
that. That's not very biblical.
I want to make sure I attribute this properly. It's Theo Katt on the nonprofit's Facebook group.
Yeah. I know about
that. She issued a statement, so she didn't just say a thing.
She issued a statement.
Yeah, this was a really important thing to say.
Just a moment. Uh-huh. Issued a statement. Can, like, anybody?
It's a press release.
Can just any old person issue a statement?
Yes.
I guess so, right?
I think so.
It just strikes me as odd. Why? Who is issuing the statement?
The wife of a judge.
I'm looking around like I don't understand why this is even a thing.
It's on behalf of an organization.
Oh, okay.
The Alabama-based Foundation for Moral Law.
Oh, my. Now, there's a fucking terrifying title.
Yeah.
God damn.
Released a letter from President Kayla Moore that,
okay.
So, opposing the appointment of a lesbian commandant for the U.S. Air Force Commandant for the U.S. Air Force Academy.
Uh-huh.
The Air Force has nominated Colonel Kristen Goodwin to be the commandant of cadets at the Air Force Academy, according to the Air Force Times. I oppose this nomination because Colonel Goodwin does not set a proper moral example for youth, Mrs. Moore wrote in a letter to Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis.
In your fucking provincial opinion, bitch.
So much for the idea that people should be able to follow their own conscience without being punished by the government.
Yeah.
Am I right?
What was the name of her organization? The what?
The Alabama-based Foundation for Moral Law is
or,
the name.
Or FML. And I was sure that I had seen that acronym before.
Nice.
And I just looked it up.
Oh, I know what it is.
It means fuck my life. Yeah. or if you want to dig a little deeper, it means force module library or flexible membrane lining.
Now, I should point out that the URL for Foundation for Moral Law is not fml.org.
Oh. I'll bet it was taken.
It is morallaw.org. Let me check. fml.org is, in fact, not taken, which surprises me because I feel like those three-letter
dude. You just said that in public, which means 10 seconds from now it will be taken. If you don't grab it yourself immediately, I will give you leave not to speak for the next 3 or 4.
However, fmylife.com is a place.
My life.
Is a place where you can go and write a brief message about the shitty thing that happened to you, and then people will vote on how bad your life is.
World that we have such services in it.
Like I said, you are never lacking for entertainment in modern times.
Oh, boy.
It's basically a Tumblr-style feed where you can just keep scrolling infinitely. Read things forever.
Hours. Right.
All right.
I'll stay away.
All right.
That's funny.
So that happened. I have three now rather lengthy and serious letters, and this seems like entirely inappropriate time to segue into something sort of, you know, serious discussion. So I will take the least serious of them all.
All right.
Luca from the Down Underverse, she says.
Mm-hmm. Down Underverse, yes. Where the maps are all upside down.
Does it really qualify as another dimension? Another universe? I don't know. Imagine that the country you live in has become a Christian theocracy. The religious government has just decreed that everyone who has been found guilty of sex before marriage is an adulterer. Furthermore, this rule applies to transgressions committed in the past, present, and future without exception. So if you're ever going to be an adulterer, you're
right.
An adulterer.
Okay.
The punishment for this crime is 3 days of torture followed by a slow, painful execution.
Okay.
It just so happens that you have been found guilty of such a crime and you have been sentenced to death and torture. Right. Upon discovering your fate, your child is distraught and comes to you and says, I love you too much and I don't want you to die. Let me take your place in and die in your stead.
What?
Would you accept such an offer?
Going a different direction than I thought.
What would you think of someone who would accept such an offer?
Ooh, I like
it. Okay. I think there is a slight course correction I'd want to make on this analogy, right? Because clearly this is the Jesus thing, right?
Right.
Like what kind of monsters are Christians for accepting that Jesus died for their sins?
Mm-hmm.
A little problematic because in the case of Jesus, it's already happened.
Right.
Right. Which is weird in Christianity because isn't the God supposed to be outside of time and therefore you could reject it now and then he in the past could go, well, fuck this then if they're not gonna accept the benefits of my sacrifice and I'm not doing it.
Right.
Right. Because he could clearly do that being magically outside of time.
Sure.
Right. But anyway, well, that's not actually the point I wanted to break up. It's that Jesus is not your child offering to do this. He's not even your parent offering to do this. He's more like your boss. Right? He's an authority figure.
Someone you supposedly love.
Yeah, but it's that weird kind of ill-defined agape love. Who knows? Who knows what that's supposed to be?
Actually, it's kind of more like the grandfather, the billionaire grandfather, right?
Yeah.
Lying in his deathbed.
Yeah.
And you're standing over him and you know if he dies, you'll stand to inherit, you know, $1 billion, right?
Yeah.
Suddenly he has a problem and the machines start beeping and he starts choking and stuff. Do you go and get a nurse or not?
Well, that's the would you rescue him question, which is very closely related, but not exactly what they're getting at here. And actually, I need to amend this a little more to make it a closer analogy, because this authority figure who's volunteering to do this for you was part of the organization that instituted these laws in the first place.
Right. Yeah.
Which I have to say, at that point, I can kind of see, go ahead. You die in my place.
Yeah.
Because that was
set up these rules.
That was a effed up set of rules that you instituted in the first place, and you shouldn't be doing that. Yes, by all means. But that doesn't really that lets the follower off the hook. It doesn't let the God off the hook.
No.
That's the thing. You know, because you'd really have to do that. You'd have to volunteer to die over and over again for every single one of your potential victims, because you shouldn't have done it at all in the first place.
Right.
And if you say, I'm not going to die in the place of people who don't love me enough, then you're a dick.
Right.
Because you still put the rules in place, which you shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
Because you're
a
dick. And
your rules are completely conditional. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Luca. We're just we're totally deconstructing your analogy here. But we totally get what you're getting at, right?
It's certainly interesting.
There is certainly
like
a
it.
Deep discussion to be had here and various ways you could slant this and various parties at fault potentially.
Right.
Because the whole
slant
thing,
it in different
the
ways,
whole thing
too.
Is just,
it's just
sick.
Horrible.
So here's where she spells it out. If it's wrong to accept the sacrifice of an innocent person that you love, then why is it moral to accept the sacrifice of Jesus when you're supposed to love him even more than your own children?
Mm-hmm.
Right. See, but the, it, Apart from the fact that it's really not an excuse that counts, because the supernatural entities are supposed to be outside of time and able to retroactively change things if they had wanted to, right? As far as the recipient of the sacrifice, the beneficiary of the sacrifice is concerned, if the child, we'll go back to your original analogy, yeah. If the child already, like, they put on a wig and your clothes and stole your ID and went down and got themselves tortured and murdered, right? You could feel terrible about it, but what are you going to do? It's a done deal, right?
Right, right.
It's still wrong.
It's already happened.
It's still wrong. The fundamental evilness of the whole thing is that that system exists in the first place.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But there are ways you can spin this where I'd say the beneficiary of the of somebody else's sacrifice is kind of off the hook if they couldn't stop it, if it's already happened, if right or even if the person being sacrificed is the one responsible for the system in the first place. I could imagine standing there cheering as they went down, but only because, you know, they freaking deserved it.
They brought it on themselves.
Yeah. I wouldn't look at that then as a loving sacrifice on their part. I would look on it as some, you know, nugget of justice.
Right. Vengeance.
Not vengeance. If they killed themselves.
Well.
It's what you call poetic justice. Mm. Okay, poetic justice. All righty. Dennis, do you have a question? Because we're...
Oh, gosh.
We're getting on to that. And
yeah, I got a question. I'm hearing in politics and stuff like that, people shouting, oh, how this president or that president, you know, furthered the aims of the Antichrist. You know, Obama was the Antichrist, or Obama helped the Antichrist, or the left is you know, helping the Antichrist. And I'm going,
sure.
Okay. How come you're saying that as if it's a bad thing if you believe in this whole thing?
Oh.
I mean, because obviously the Antichrist has to happen before you can have all this stuff and Jesus return and Armageddon and all that stuff that you're all looking forward to.
Yeah.
How is that a bad thing?
I've seen Left Behind.
Yeah.
The older one with Kirk Cameron, not the one with Nick Cage yet.
Right.
I've seen the Omega Code too. I've seen a lot
of
Antichrist
movies. Don't these people want to meet Jesus?
Hmm.
Okay. So. Wow.
And if events go differently, God's prophecy is wrong.
I'm really going to have to contort to try to fit myself into a Christian world to answer this. But. Yep.
You should see this. It's not pretty. So, Jeff is contorting all over the place right now.
So, you've seen altered states, right?
It's not like the Antichrist has to appear in order for me to see my loved ones. I would get that anyway in due course.
Right. But to see Jesus, he has to, right?
No.
No?
You don't think Jesus is up in heaven? Of course he is.
Oh, well, I imagine so. Okay, right.
So the normal course of living and dying to a person who believes this crap, right, would be you'd eventually. So it's not your accusation that it doesn't make sense because they'd want the Antichrist to come so they could go see their loved ones and Jesus is not true.
Oh, okay.
Right? What the Antichrist is doing is making it happen sooner, and just because God is planning, this is where the real contortions come in.
Right.
Just because God's plan is that Satan will triumph for a while doesn't mean that Satan becomes a good guy. there's such a thing as you're familiar with the concept of necessary evils, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You could be a necessary evil and still be evil, right? Just because I'm trying to think of a good example.
Well, you get a shot and it saves you and right. It hurts, you have a but sting. It saves you from a disease.
Right. Doesn't mean you have to love the pain of the shot. Right. You still go, ah. Right.
Not if you're a Christian.
You can still really not like that.
Huh?
And I think that's maybe an excuse.
It's all part of God's plan. And God's plan is apparently filled with necessary evil.
Yeah.
So God isn't – well, no, that leaves on a whole nother argument where God is unable to create a situation where necessary evil is unnecessary. Yeah.
That was well said. I like that.
Necessary evil is unnecessary. Why couldn't God have created that universe? Nope.
So is that an answer to your question?
Yeah, I guess so. Now, there are actual Christians working towards the thing. You know, they're actually, we got to get a calf of this particular color to this particular location to do this particular thing to make the whole end times happen.
Yeah.
There are Christians actually doing that.
Right.
That's a step further. Uh-huh. They're actually rah-rah Armageddon, you know.
Are they Christians or are they Satanists?
They're Christians.
Okay.
At least they profess they're Christians. They say they are. Well, I'm in no position to contradict them.
That's just the reason I ask is because it's not like they have switched over to rooting for the other side
in order to
make it happen. They're just trying to
manage
the transition. Yeah. Just in the way that, you know, you might wear a short-sleeved shirt when you're going in to get your necessary evil shot.
Well, they've read the Bible.
You're doing things to accommodate the occurrence of the necessary evil.
They're setting up all the preparation.
And that's not necessarily a contradiction.
No. They're less of a contradiction, but the horrible thing is they're looking for forward to the destruction.
Let's look at this part. Let's look at this part, right? I mean, the when we say that a shot is a necessary evil, what's the evil part? The evil is your
moment. It hurts.
Moment of pain.
Yeah, your moment of pain.
Your moment of pain, right? So a guy who he's your friend and he's taking you to the doctor, right?
Yeah.
And he exposed you to the illness that you're getting inoculated for in the first place because he wanted to make it happen.
Oh.
Now we're in your analogy of these guys. It could well be that you would have had to get this shot anyway, but this jerk
forced the event.
It's a very weird little cul-de-sac you get into of how much they're at fault.
Yeah, sure is.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Good question.
Thank you, Dennis. And I think that which should lead us directly into.
It should, in fact, lead us directly.
You would think it would.
Well, indirectly into shit. Internet apologists say.
All right, and.
Sometimes I've tried to get clever about keeping things topical or unusual, but, you know, this is going to be a pretty standard apologetic. It's straight up intended to be educational, air quotes.
Okay. Oh, boy. Awesome. It's Christians talking to each other. These are some of my favorites. Yes.
And what are they talking to each other about?
Atheists.
Oh, okay.
Really, it's about us, huh?
They're teaching each other How to reach your secular neighbor.
If you believe in God, how come you're always talking about atheists?
I want to express my appreciation to at Skeptic Mom, who contributed quite a lot of suggestions for news stories this week. Taking her suggestion for shit apologists say this time. Thanks for tweeting to the hashtag nonprofits news. That's how we get a lot of show material. So here, and I just want to set the scene here on Christian Post. We got a smug looking gray haired white guy with his arms folded in like a fancy jacket. So
what is the name of that smug?
He's a very serious man.
What is the name of that smug white guy?
Well, it's either Eric Metaxas or Stan Guthrie, both of whom are op-ed contributors to having written this article,
Metaxas?
Metaxas.
Okay.
Of course, that could always just be a stock photo of what we wanted. Oh, nope, that's the guy.
Okay. Well, it's this. That is the same photo three times, so actually I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, he's got ericmetaxas.com.
Okay.
He's selling a book with the Statue of Liberty on the cover, so.
Neat.
Oh, he's not pretentious. That's good.
Yes. It is not yet determined, because the photo is blurry, whether the Statue of Liberty is crying on an eagle or anything like that.
You blew it up. Damn you.
Anyway.
I was up to shake your fist at the Statue of Liberty when you see it, because it was in that movie.
Eric says, "Ever wondered why secular people aren't interested in God?
Ask us. We'll tell you."
Yeah.
We will, but that is not the solution. The solution is maybe we've never given them a reason to be.
I'd
agree with that. You have not given us a reason to be interested. That's not a bad start.
I think, you know.
He's right so far. Keep
going. Kindly inclined so far.
Yeah.
When it comes to sharing Jesus Christ with the growing number of religious nuns in America, thank you for acknowledging the growing part. That is, those who answer none when asked to describe their religious beliefs or affiliations. Mm-hmm. There's no silver bullet. See, this guy's not getting out of the park so far.
So far.
That's the bad news.
Yeah.
The good news is the golden rule still works pretty well.
All right.
In what way?
That's the gist of a thought-provoking and ultimately encouraging article by Khaldun Swice, who is a tutor of philosophy at Oxford University and associate professor of philosophy at Olive Harvey College in Chicago. Okay.
I think they got
a lot of atheists at Oxford.
A lot of educated stuff. Okay. Keep going.
Khaldun starts off his argument, which you'll find in our friend Ed Stetzer's blog, The Exchange, by making a shocking claim.
Yes.
Khaldun says of the nuns, "They not only think that they don't need God, but many have never been given a single reason as to why he is relevant to their lives."
But the missing sentence here is, "but not for lack of trying."
Right.
We have been approached with things that were described to us as reasons why God is relevant in our lives.
Oh, yeah, every day, all the time.
And I would dare say most atheists have been approached with such claims.
Regularly.
Multiple times. If it's the same one over and over again, it doesn't really count, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So far, this whole article is this guy being astounded by really obvious, boring stuff.
Okay.
Let's see if it gets better. The respected Pew Research Center reports that half of these secular neighbors say they left their childhood faith because they no longer believe it or are no longer interested in it. Khaldun tells of a secular female.
God. A secular female subject.
Who dismissed a courageous boy passing out tracts, saying, "I don't want or need your God. Thank you very much." Ouch!
Oh, such pain.
Wow. That hurt, huh?
Yeah. Okay.
There's your necessary evil right there.
Let's see.
So, wait a minute now.
Yes.
So he said of atheists, half left their religion because they don't believe, right?
Uh-huh.
Now, wouldn't they, wouldn't all of them qualify as people who had been told things that were supposed to be reasons why the God was relevant in their lives?
Yeah, it would seem like the problem is not that atheists haven't been given any reason to believe. It's that none of these anybody have been given any reason to believe.
He doesn't – he blurts that out. But does he build a case out of it? Where is he going with this? What about the other half? The other half would be people who had never had a religion? Okay.
Yeah.
Then presumably he's just – he's just narrowed his focus to half of atheists.
Yeah.
With this particular line of attack, which is, ooh, let's tell them this thing they've never heard before.
Yeah.
He's wrong because even that other half have heard, have been approached with such claims, right? But at least arguably some of them might not have.
Yes. And always called good news. Yes.
So this article seems like it's going to veer into a lot of sucking up to this to Oxford philosophy professor who apparently has been sharing the good news of Jesus with such people for the last 15 years. And he will ask them to, here it comes, describe the God they don't believe in.
Oh, he's got a silver bullet.
Oh, how lucky. 9 times out of 10, he writes, it's usually a god I don't believe in either.
Oh, wow. Is this not new?
Yeah.
We have been told this, right? And we've encountered this strategy. When does this article date back to? Does it date back to the 80s or something?
No, this article was published on April 5th. That was today.
Wow. So that's
because
just totally
secular
not,
mom is super on
totally
top
not,
of things.
Not true. And all that's happening here is
skeptic mom. Sorry,
the mimetic the mimetic engine of let's have a belief in a God that is weirdly mysterious and inconsistent, right? So then whenever anybody else describes our God to us, we can say that's not it.
That's not it.
Yeah. Oh, you must have misunderstood.
Right.
Or, I mean –
whereas, in fact, what we're doing is we're honestly relating back to you the crazy shit that we have been told.
Right. It doesn't have to be vague or weird either. It could just be due to the fact that most religious people disagree with most other religious people about
there's
what
that too. There's that too.
They can't keep their story straight.
It used to be a lot easier when there was just the Catholic Church to describe what the God was supposed to be.
Yeah,
right?
They could be monolithic. But now it's like, no.
But even then, suppose you've got an atheist who really doesn't have any idea what the hell you mean.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then his reason for not believing in that God is because he doesn't know what the hell it is. And we're not in the business of believing things that we don't even know what they are.
Right.
But this person is thinking,
then we should tell them. Every other freaking Christian.
Presumably. And how does that work out for him?
Right. So I mean, it sounds like this Khaldun guy will say, you know, have you thought about Jesus in your life? And then people will say, well, I don't believe in God. And he's like, describe this God you don't believe in. And then they'll say something.
Up in the clouds with a beard.
And then he'll be like, you're wrong.
Okay.
I win. But so I haven't seen yet whether he actually convinces anybody.
All right.
Okay.
So what's the description of the one true God that he's got?
Right. Rather than getting all defensive about it and lecturing them about their mistaken worldview, Khaldun will engage them. Good. I approve.
Okay. In what?
I actually don't approve.
Okay.
Fuck off.
He commends such engagement to all of us in the four major arenas of secular thought: government, education, media, and culture.
What does that have to do with your invisible man in the sky, who is one of the other things
is
not it?
I have a great idea about how to get a message across. you can pass laws about it and put it on TV and make people teach it in schools. I'm a genius. I've come up with a new idea.
So where does this go?
Yeah, use the pluralism diversity thesis. Oh, geez.
Oh, no, no.
To gain a seat at their table. After all, according to them, Christianity is just another paradigm, and since they don't want to be intolerant of any viewpoint, you should be allowed to speak too.
Ooh. Oh, wow. That's nice. Really putting directly into words something that I have long suspected, that they're actively manipulating. Yeah, they're gaming the system.
Oh, yeah.
And in fact, no, dude. Not just anybody gets a seat at the table.
But they are allowed to speak. They already have a seat at the table.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have equal – your words do not have equal weight just because they're words.
Right.
Ultimately, once you're at the table, if you spout fucking nonsense, you will then be ignored at the table.
Yeah.
Or should be.
Or should be. Go ahead.
I have no doubt that when Khaldun's arguments fail to convince anybody, you've got dozens of different theists ready to jump out and say, you see, Khaldun was expressing an idea of God that isn't the right one.
The real one, right.
Just like
exactly.
What he said.
Exactly.
All right. And Khaldun says we can edify. Oh, boy.
Edify?
George, he says, whose father died over 10 years ago. Ooh, you can tell people anecdotes that are relatable. That's a new one, too.
Boy, is this cold-blooded.
George, whose father died over 10 years ago, never forgot that I was one of his only friends who came to that funeral. Oh, okay. If you know people long enough, they will inevitably go through difficult times.
Oh, yes. It is fucking cold-blooded predation on people who are
fucking vultures.
People who are in emotionally fragile positions.
This is the opportunity to show them the love of Christ. Is it is demanding, if not impossible, for people to forget that when the heart is tender, it is more open than any other time.
Fuck this unspeakable piece of shit. God damn.
That, my friends, is evangelism according to the golden rule.
Right, because exactly what they want is they want to be manipulated when they're at their most vulnerable.
Yeah.
That's the gold rule.
Fucking assholes.
Do unto others, right, as you would have others do unto you. You want to be manipulated when you're at your most vulnerable?
Right.
Damn right. We'll do that.
Yeah. God. So what have we learned so far?
I don't know how, but I am willing to give them that if that is what they truly desire.
So I guess what we've learned so far is, let's see.
They're manipulative jackholes.
Yeah.
No wonder I don't want to have anything to do with these shitholes.
I'm just going to list some things. Be purposefully vague and then jump on people when they don't describe the vague thing that you had in mind. Emotionally manipulate their desire to be tolerant and open-minded.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. By
take advantage of them.
Abuse your right of free speech.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Jump on people who are emotionally vulnerable.
Yeah.
Let's see. I guess that's about it.
Not just jump on people when they're emotionally vulnerable. Lie in wait.
Yeah.
Right.
Looking for that inevitable moment when they'll be down in the dumps and then get them.
Spring. Yeah.
Fuck these people.
None of this, of course, tells like what kind of content your arguments should have,
right.
Or what is a convincing argument
for God.
That's
coming next, I'm sure.
No, this is about over. It's all about how to.
So it's basically just saying, "Hi, we're subhuman scum."
Yeah.
Bye. Okay, I knew it all along.
Yep. Throughout this process, and most times, evangelism is nothing if not a process. We'll need to be ready to give an answer for the hope we have in Jesus. Part of that readiness involves having resources at our fingertips.
Whoa, stop. An answer for the hope they have in Jesus. What does that even mean?
No,
don't have any hope in Jesus. They're secular. What the fuck?
What? No.
What are you talking about?
Read the sentence again.
Sorry.
We'll need to be ready to give an answer for the hope we have in Jesus.
Oh, right.
We have.
You're right.
Right. That doesn't even make the evangelist.
They have to answer.
What the fuck does that mean? And why do they think we even give a shit? I mean, the answer I'm looking for is, where is the evidence that your invisible friend exists? Period. Establish that. Then we can move on to the question of what to do about that.
Jeff, have you experienced a loss lately? Or perhaps
fuck you.
Had a sad day?
Fuck you. Show me the evidence that this
show
thing.
Show me the money.
Show me the.
You said it. So now I'll say it.
Sorry. Dennis and I are watching a show called Making History on Hulu, which is pretty funny.
And then he plugs somebody's book and links a website.
I do not care about your hope in this thing.
Yes.
I care about not yet. First, I care, does the thing even frickin' exist?
Right.
I do. If I'm in down in the dumps, the last thing I need is false hope.
Fucking fairy tales.
Screw your false hope. All right. Well, that was fun.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was a pretty good
one.
That
generated some good outrage, too.
I hate that guy and his friend.
Sometimes straightforward, standard things are
if there was a hell, they could go straight
for this segment. All right. That's done with.
That actually kind of segues pretty well into one of my letters.
Oh,
actually,
no.
Both, but let's do this one first. Peter from Sweden says, I'm a general surgeon, brought up with no God in our house, a child of the 70s. I regularly interact with people who are close to death. Often, I'm the first one to know this, and I'm the one to bring the news to the person it regards and to their loved ones. My approach has always been a combination of being very present, stationary, i.e. the phone is off and I will not be hurried off somewhere else, and listening. It might seem or sound strange, but I'm not at all unhappy that this is part of my job. I give clear information that in turn gives my patients a sense of certainty and quite often the possibility of goodbyes and getting their affairs in order. That said, I sometimes relive the conversation when I get home, and sometimes I cry. I don't mind, since the joy I get from work heavily outweighs these sadnesses. My only real problem with giving people the worst kind of news is when religion gets to take a major role.
Oh, man.
Generally speaking, this happens with older people brought up in the Sweden of the mid-early 1900s when Protestantism was the state religion. Some of these individuals are very, very strong believers in a society where religion has been gradually marginalized during their lifetime. I can't say how many times I have heard one or other variation of the question, but surely, doctor, you have seen life and death. Surely you can give me the comforting confidence that I will be with my wife in heaven when I leave this painful life. Right? Exactly the kind of shit that the Christians are lying in wait
to spring
on the same person. A dozen or more times every year, this happens enough times to give me grief. I hate this question. It's mostly the loneliest of the dying who bring this up. That's when it really gets to me. It's their last pillar of comfort and stability in a crumbling existence. They need to be reassured. As a doctor, my job is to soothe, to comfort, and sometimes to cure. My own complete lack of belief in an afterlife and an ever-living parent in the sky pushes me into a strange corner, dancing around the worst fears of my patients. I base the entirety of my profession on knowledge, skill, honesty, and a willingness to go the extra mile for my patient. This situation conflicts me greatly. My honesty is my sword and my shield. It's non-negotiable. It's why my patients can rest comfortably at night. They know they're getting the truth. At the same time, it's my responsibility to comfort a dying, lonely fellow human. I hate this dilemma.
Hmm.
I don't expect you guys to solve this, but I really needed to get it off my chest. My default response has evolved into asking questions about what they think will happen and not really giving any input. So,
wow, that's a rough road to hoe. Yeah. That's, man.
But doing it with honesty, a sense of responsibility and integrity, instead of as a vulture lying in wait to make the guy, to steer the guy into believing the same shit that you do.
Right.
Thank you for that for that letter.
Wow, Pat, I don't know how much we can say about that. Said that's Peter at the really heavy.
Well, I mean, it's tough. There is a reason why the strategy of these Christian vampires works, right?
Yeah.
There's a reason with people do get vulnerable. People do get vulnerable in exactly that way, and that's when you can jump on them. It used to be okay, you know, if you trust Blackadder.
Why wouldn't you?
It used to be about the church as a big monolithic organization trying to get your money from rich people when they were about to die, right? By getting them to give all their earthly things to the church. And so you'd need on their deathbed to get them. There was actually profit to be made.
Right.
There's no fucking profit to be made by just getting some poor sap to believe in your invisible friend.
Mm-hmm.
Why on earth do Christians need to make such a big fucking deal out of this in the first place? That's what I don't understand.
Because the existence of atheists offends them.
Well, their existence offends me, but I'm willing to share the planet with them.
They're not.
And not only am I willing to share the planet with them, I'm not hanging around waiting for them to be distraught so I can turn them into atheists. I would much rather have that discussion when they are, you know, able to defend themselves or, you know, to the degree that they
ever
can. But
in their interest of maintaining their bubble, they have to get everyone around them to agree.
Yeah, it's fucking sick.
If you've got a friend who's distraught, I mean, you know, it's totally appropriate to just basically comfort them and be there for them and say things that are helpful to them.
Yep.
And maybe, you know, if you want to have an argument with them or try to persuade them of something, do it later.
All right. Yeah. Well, that's a bit of a downer to end the show on. But I just checked and we are basically out of time.
Well, then let me just throw out a headline for you.
Sure. All right.
Sure.
Do we need a quick guest to respond to this headline?
I don't know. Do we? I think maybe we do.
All right.
I don't know. My friend Dean Jones tweeted at me, and also Jeff posted it separately on Facebook. Pat Robertson says, I'm being dominated by homosexuals.
Well. Hello, gentlemen. It's terrible.
How are you being dominated?
Well, that's a traditional way. And, there's leather garments, and there's a whip, and a woman in best spiked heels, and it's terrible. The ball gag and the whole nine yards.
But
I'd been trying to tell them this is terribly inappropriate, but they're just not listening.
But no, surely you meant culturally.
No, I don't think so. I'm a man of my word. Why would I? Use a euphemism when I'm talking about?
Okay, surely
physically haven't been forced to have experienced pleasures beyond my wildest dreams.
Have you
heard
expressed your dismay to them?
I noticed that Russell has not read the other story about me, which is that I'm planning on making movies with Kevin Sorbo, and. I'll just say that
which of you is going to dominate the other one?
We have got some ideas about what these movies should be about. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Woo. Dennis, will
check
you
out
please?
Friendly Atheist for this story.
All right.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Well, that was our show. We hope it made your crossing to Tartarus more pleasant. If you're at the Lethe, then I should remind you that we'll be back in another with another episode in 2 weeks on the 19th of April, but you probably won't remember. So until then, here's I Am the Satellite by Brian Stieksma. Hey there, brother, don't you know the guy upstairs left us years ago? So there ain't no fate except the one you make. And there ain't no hell except the shit you take every day. So don't tell me life doesn't hurt.